For May the 16th, 2025, we talk about Alterium Shift, Arkanoid vs. Space Invaders, Ace Attorney Investigations Collection, and much more. Welcome to Level 543. My name is Kay Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm Moxie.
And I'm Jella Prendez.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Jella, you've been away the longest. What you been up to?
It's been some time. Yeah. I was completely exhausted for a full month. And I did reruns on my podcast just to give myself some space.
Yeah.
And just needed to recover from a lot of things. And then after that, I started going to concerts kind of nonstop.
Okay. All right.
And so I went to one on Sunday night for Central C. He's a UK rapper. Mm-hmm. And it was a good show. And also the crowd was fantastic. And there were all different ages, all different ethnicities, like a really, really great crowd that, like, I haven't seen people throw stuff on stage for a musician that I've gone to see just out of sheer love, to just want to give him gifts and stuff and have like signs and things. I haven't seen that shit since I went to Miyavi concerts, like, I don't know, over a decade ago now. So, you know, like that was really sweet to see. So, yeah, that was a fun concert. That was on Sunday. But I also, Dave and I have been going to other concerts. We saw Wheel, that was a Dave pick, and then Fame on Fire, which was my pick. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be going to see, is it this coming? It's next week. Metalachi, the metal mariachi band.
Oh, yeah.
So
that is a pretty great name.
Are they?
Yeah, I've talked about them before. It's been a few years, but I've seen them before in concert. You really just have to see them in concert like at once and then you're good. But
do they play metal songs in the style of mariachi, or do they play mariachi songs in the style of metal?
Both.
Okay.
But they do primarily covers of like classic metal songs that they do. They also have original music as well. They play a little bit of that, but they're primarily a cover band. And then they do like a mariachi spin on that, you know, like classic songs that you know.
Yeah.
And they are really like, they have a very good stage presence and really get the crowd involved and everything.
I'm sure.
So, you know, like they're really, really like, I've listened to their albums. They're nowhere near as good as like actually just seeing them live. So if people are like, oh, that sounds interesting, I need to hear what this sounds like. Just bear in mind, it doesn't sound like that. It sounds way better like when you see them live.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Nice. Yeah. That's a ton of shows.
Yeah. Yeah, and then that's not even the half of it, because then June 1st and 2nd, we're going to go see Ice Nine Kills, which is a metal band that does songs about horror media, horror properties, primarily movies, but also stuff like Resident Evil, which the song is actually in the video that they did for it.
Yeah, you sent that to me.
Oh. Yeah, that one is based more on the games than anything. So, yeah, but they do these big productions where they actually get horror people involved, you know, like directors and actors and things like that, and also get like some budding new talent that, you know, are aspiring horror directors to do like these 12-minute long videos that have like a narrative around the music video part, and then there's a music video, and there's like an overarching storyline that goes through all of them. So like it's a little bit more of a production, and apparently they're really good live. I have a friend, Aaron, shout out to him, who has seen them live before and says that they're really good. And they do a 2-night show because they have two albums, The Silver Scream and Welcome to Horrorwood, that are the two albums that really are in this new style. They have other stuff too, but you know, it was before they found, you know, like their thing, you know.
Yeah.
So. Huh. Yeah, yeah, so those will be fun, and it kind of keeps going. There's more coming up after that. We have like a whole calendar full, and this is like going to shows has been like our therapy.
Yeah,
for dealing with the world right now.
Yeah, so. Better ways to do it. And here I felt all ambitious, like, oh, I'm going to be going to a Laura Jane Grace show in June, and you've gone to like seven of them in the past week.
Man, it was seriously like it was one Tuesday we went to one show, and then we're like, oh, but then next Tuesday there's another one that we got to go to. I don't know why it was on Tuesday, but both of them were on Tuesday back to back. back. And then, you know, we had just gone to the Spirit Box concert before that. And mm-hmm. we were just like, okay, every week, apparently, you know, more or less, not every week, but like,
yeah,
you know, for a little while there. Cause I live within about 15 minutes of a bar that does live music. And they are like one of the, smaller venues that has live music for a cheaper price mm-hmm. that has like some smaller bands that, you know, you might've heard of, you might like, but like, they're not going to sell out like at the larger venues downtown or anything. Mm-hmm. So we have been going there, when we get the chance, cause it's very easy to get to in and out. You don't have to pay for parking and all that mess. It's cheaper, you know, very chill. But yeah. Aside from that, I've also started streaming again. So
you have, yeah.
I have been streaming. Like, not only did I just start streaming again, I've been streaming like 3 days a week. It's been a mm-hmm. lot. So I'm not going to keep that kind of a pace up forever. Yeah. But, you know, at this moment, I'm co-oping Resident Evil 6 yet again. Mm-hmm.
with Rookie, right?
Yeah, with Rookie. So we've been going through that, and that's been a lot of fun. We finished all of Leon and Helena. Now we are on Chris and Piers. Mm. And then there's that. And I've been streaming other stuff, which I'll talk about some of those games today. And and there's another one that I am currently streaming. I'm not going to talk about it this time, partially because I'm kind of hoping that you also turn around and stream it, Kay.
Okay.
Karma the Dark World. I'm going to be finishing that one up this Saturday. So like, if people listen to this show when it drops, depending upon if it drops on Friday or on Saturday, you might already be too late, but the VOD will be there mm-hmm. Either way. So you can catch all of those. And I'm archiving all of these streams on my YouTube as well.
Okay.
So if anybody misses something and it falls off of Twitch for whatever reason, it is also archived to my YouTube. So.
Cool. Nice. You've got a lot going on.
I've been busy. And then I like looked at the calendar and I'm like, yeah, shit, it's been like 2 months and I haven't been mm-hmm. on the show.
Yeah.
I guess I should probably tap one of the folks on the shoulder and be like, mm-hmm. hey, whose turn is it to be in the cistern?
Yeah.
So
it's
whose
good.
Cistern is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis, that was you volunteering to talk next.
Damn it. Mm-hmm. No, actually, I've got a good one this week because summer is starting. My littlest has officially completed his first year of preschool.
Mm-hmm.
So last day of class was on Sunday, on Monday, and it was, you know, they did like a big slideshow of all the, you know, memories and photographs from the year, and parents came and watched it and everything. It was a whole deal that I got to do. So that was a lot of fun. And we got home and Jen was working from home that day, but couldn't get away for the slideshow. She was asking him how was it and everything. Mm-hmm. And he goes, it's great. There are lots of pictures, but none of them were on slides.
All right.
Realize this kid has no reference point for what a slideshow is.
Right.
He was earnestly expecting, I guess, everyone going down the slide on the playground or something. So, we like just lost it.
That's good.
Took that a couple is a, minutes to
that
recover.
That is very cute kid etymology.
Yes. Peak toddler there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so Barrett's out, and then Luke and Milo are finishing their school year, I think the end of next week.
Wow.
So I've been accruing our third places. I think we're just going to have a good rotation of the pool, the zoo, the museum, the arcade, and like choose your favorite park.
Yeah.
And we're just going to like every day swap through those.
Hmm.
We'll see how it goes.
Nice. Yeah.
So it went fast, guys. Why does time keep on speeding up?
Yeah, no, it's because any given period of time as you get older is a smaller fraction of your overall life. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yes, 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 yes.
Yeah.
The other question that came up today, because we were talking about how school is over, because I don't think Barrett fully grasped it.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, oh, do they not live there anymore?
That's very cute.
Yeah. Don't you ever
get a lot of those like, little nuggets?
Are you ever tempted to keep them stupid so that never stops? Like that fun?
Oh no, we actively do that. There are several words. Among them, fingers. Like I my fingers okay. on my hand. That they say with a th instead of an f. Uh-huh. And I at one point, because all our kids say it, including the 10-year-old.
Oh, and, yeah, that's a little bit, that's kind of past its sell-by date.
Well, so I told her, I was like, it's fingers, right? Uh-huh. And Jen, like, basically punched me in the eye. I was like, don't take this from me. And I at one point I talked to Milo about it too. And he's kind of like, yeah, but it's fingers. another one, a casualty. We actually lost this recently. Was when you want some water, you say, "Hey, mommy, I'm drinky."
Ooh,
instead of "I'm thirsty." Yeah, mm-hmm. And so, but that one has fallen away. I'm trying to think of others. Yeah,
I have to say, and preface this, I'm joking, but this kills me as someone who grew up with a speech impediment.
Fair enough. Very different contexts,
right?
So there's honestly, you get a fire hose of just hilarious moments, whether you're trying for it or not. It's gonna be there.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Moxie, how about you?
Man, I'm trying to think.
You've been bobbing and weaving.
Yes, I have in fact been bobbing and weaving. I'm starting to get.
Where are you going
to
finish that shawl?
You know, it's,
why does
it's,
a shawl sound so right out of all the things he could be?
I mean, that is fair. You know, it's an artisanal shawl, so you really can't rush it.
It's one of those forever shawls.
Exactly. Oh,
no. You can't rush greatness. Mm-hmm.
Although speaking of clothing and whatnot, I'm getting ready for Pride Pride Month here, so trying to figure that out. Mainly trying to figure out like things like, am I going to pay for parking or just like take the train and stuff like that, and I'm
not living there. I don't have to be bound to this choice, but also if you have the train, I would want to use it.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I'm thinking. Also, like if I want to drink while I'm there, the train makes it a lot easier.
Yeah. But, yeah. You know, even if you don't plan on drinking, having the option is nice if you meet up with some people.
Right.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. So,
yeah. Well, especially since you need to be meeting up with Marty. Jeez.
Yeah. I need to figure out when they're going out to it, because I'm sure they're going to be there at least some.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, it's a huge thing. Just tons of events, tons of brunches, and you know, drag shows and stuff like that. A bunch of music. Also, apparently, RuPaul does music, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh.
I did not know that.
Yeah, that's been a thing.
Yeah, the two people I didn't know did music were him and Paris Hilton.
A queen of many talents.
Yeah. I knew both of those.
Yeah.
I thought Paris Hilton just did reality TV shows.
No.
I thought RuPaul just did reality TV shows.
Paris Hilton was flogging NFTs for a little bit, but like she's probably like, it's actually kind of neat. She's doing a lot of stuff to raise awareness for like teen crisis camp things. Just basically like, you know, rich parents whose kids are out of control, sending them off to be tortured by religious people.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Is that different than like conversion therapy? I mean,
squares and rectangles, I think.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's just a factoid that I know about.
Yeah,
her.
No, that's very cool. Yeah. It's, I'm not super plugged into music stuff. So like, a lot of this stuff kind of flies over my head, but.
Yeah. I want to go to the Columbus Pride. I need to see, like, I need to like put out a call for any like listeners in the area who are going.
I saw that map that you posted that was just, depressing.
fucking dire. Yeah. No, just the this map of the northern half of Ohio, which is just a big void with one dot in the middle, and that dot is the fucking Mansfield Pride.
Oh, wow.
Wow, that kind of surprises me, actually.
Yeah, no, they've had a pride for a while. It's not especially organized.
Oh, no, not that. I would have thought there would be more, because, like, even in, like, Alabama, there was a fair amount of pride stuff all over the place.
Yeah. No, you would think there would be something like over in Marion, like college town kind of stuff.
But, right, exactly. Yeah.
That is just from the Buckeye Flame, which is the state's LGBTQ publication. I don't know if that is a complete map. It was just incredibly bleak looking at it.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. That's just, I needed to share that as a, you know. Yeah. Just to let people know roughly where I'm at here.
Although I would imagine Columbus would probably be a pretty pretty rocking place, because that's a, I don't know, I having lived there then, or in the area then moved away, I feel like Columbus is really underappreciated.
Mm-hmm.
When I was there that one time, it was great.
Yeah.
Have you ever gone to the Arnold?
That's why I was in Columbus, but then COVID hit.
Yeah.
We couldn't get rid of our tickets, so we ended up in Columbus during COVID, but Arnold tickets.
No, that's okay.
Sometime you need to do the actual Arnold.
I would love to, but I need money.
Yeah.
Right, money now is not the time.
You need money to do things. Right. Yeah. No, that's when you that's when we met for dinner, and I think that was the first time that I met Dave.
Yeah.
And then you went to the reformatory when my dad was working there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, doing the tour guide stuff. Yeah.
And it was not difficult to spot him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't have anything fun to talk about. There's stuff to talk about. It's not fun. So I think I'm just gonna keep it light, and we can talk about video games that we want. And to do that, we have to do the regular kind of show. What with the grind, the multiplayer, and the end boss. And why don't we get started with
the grind?
The grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. Jala, I'm going to throw to you since you've been away the longest.
Forever. So, yes, the very first thing that I will talk about is something that I actually swore I had talked about before, but actually I had just talked to a whole bunch of people that I like about it. And then I had hallucinated that I had talked about it on the show.
Okay.
So anyway, the game is Alterium Shift. I have played the demo. I have not finished the demo because the demo is incredibly meaty. I did 2.5 hours in it. And I wasn't done, but I was like, I just need to wait until I get my Steam key. And since I have that now, I will begin streaming it coming up on this next Monday. So, again, if people are very spry and listen to this podcast right when it comes out, then you will be in time to catch that stream. Otherwise, you'll get the VOD.
Just follow her on Twitch so you can see when she goes live. Come on.
I do the thing. So, yeah. Yeah. So anyway, Alterium Shift is an SNES-inspired indie JRPG currently in early access on Steam. It's being developed by Dratzy Games, and it recently had a very successful Kickstarter. 50% of the core game is complete, and they are working on completing the rest of it. So inspirations for this game include things such as Chrono Trigger, Secret of Mana, and Final Fantasy.
It looks really Grandia-esque to me.
Yes, yes. Yeah. In this game, you select one of three heroes, Pyrrha, Sage, or Atlas, and each of them has their own personality and expertise. Mm-hmm. So Pyrrha is basically your Leonardo type, like from Ninja Turtles. And
boring.
Is a spear and is a spear user. Sage is a snarky, non-binary mage who is my favorite character. And then Atlas is your shy little brother who also happens to be an archer. So
I feel like can you be a mage without being at least a little bit queer? Like,
yeah,
right. But I mean, like, I love Sage though. Like when I'm streaming this, I'm also going to be playing Sage because I tried a little bit of Atlas, I tried a little bit of Pyrrha, but I don't care for them. I like Sage, so that's who I'm playing. And it's probably going to be like, we'll talk about it. I'll talk about it in a minute. But like, there are things that you can only unlock as one or another character. Like, each of the characters have special abilities that allow them on the overworld map as you run around it to unlock certain things that the others can't. Mm-hmm. So in that way, it encourages you to replay and try different stuff and use different characters. But I don't know if I'm ever going to like do that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I pick my favorite. I don't know. Like, that's just how that goes. So,
yeah.
Anyway, the premise is that you are part of a special order of heroes, which is at this point pretty run down. And like, you are there was this big war about like this power source for magic and things like that. And so like you're part of this order that's supposed to preserve peace and things like that. But, you know, it's been a long time since all of the wars and stuff happened. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can read about basically at any time, like from the very beginning of the game. There's a lot of lore that you can find out if you want to dig in. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, like when you're starting out, you're just like, you know, one of the apprentices in this place. And then you are going out to just do some, you know, like low-key missions and stuff, because you're training, you know, as part of your training, the next step of your training, you need to go out and start doing, you know, bigger adventures solo and things like that. So each of the different characters are given different types of tasks and different missions to go complete. And then, of course, like the story kind of expands from there. But again, I played in the demo. I'm only talking about demo parts. So,
yeah.
The graphics, it's high def 2.5D pixel graphics with dynamic lighting. It is very pretty. As for the gameplay, it has choice-driven narrative. It's turn-based combat. I want to note, too, that a revamp of the combat system is one of the things that the Kickstarter was for. So the current iteration of the combat is not the final rendition of what that combat's going to look like, because they're working on that yet. Mm-hmm. They're revamping it and changing things. But from what I played, it feels like a Final Fantasy type turn-based combat in terms of the UI, but with a turn order bar up at the top. So, you know, kind of got like your action bar thing going.
Mm-hmm.
From the tutorial text, it's meant to be more tactical, the way that something like Lunar's battles are. Position on the map isn't an element the way that it is in Lunar, though. But there's like this intended flow of blocking, target selection, deployment of skills, you know, kind of finding a certain flow to the battle, depending upon the types of enemies that you're facing, that feels similar to what Lunar was doing in terms of bringing stuff to the tactical table.
Mm-hmm.
So something else that's part of this game that I haven't gotten to, dimension shifting to solve puzzles, uncover secrets, and alter the landscape. Because this story takes place between two different worlds that you basically warp in between.
Okay.
So, you know, it's got that kind of element to it.
Hence the shifting.
Yeah. There's also save shifting, which I've also not seen yet. It's a mechanic that allows you to sacrifice saved games to impact play across playthroughs. And that's all I know about it, that sentence. So this has potential.
That is quite a sentence.
Yes, yeah. It has potential to be an interesting element that causes you to rethink your priorities, but it also has potential to be a net negative depending upon how it's implemented. Because like, say, for example, I think back to Lunar Eternal Blue, because here's me referencing Lunar a lot, and that's not even something that they, you know, said was an influence. But Lunar Eternal Blue on Sega CD, the Sega CD version forced you to choose between leveling up your character's skills or saving the game with those same points.
Oh, no.
So
that is so bad.
Eventually, that mechanic was rendered pretty inconsequential because, like, you know, at a certain point, the 500 points that it takes to save your game isn't but a drop in the bucket to the thousands that you need to upgrade your skills and stuff.
Okay.
But, you know, like at first it was basically strongly discouraging you from save scumming. And that mechanic was not in the PS1 remake at all.
Hmm.
So, you know, so this is the only thing that I can think of, just because this is the only other game I can refer back to in my own personal experience that has something to do with the saves and, like, you know, getting rid of save data or something like limiting your save data in a way, you know. But all of that said, this game saves all the fucking time. So you have a ton of auto saves on hand.
Okay.
Like it auto saves after basically anything that you do. So like that was a very convenient for me because when I was going through the demo and I was like, oh, I wonder what would happen if I picked the other, you know, option in that conversation. And then there was an auto save from like right before that conversation happened. And I could just toggle back and then redo that part, you know, with no problem. Yeah. So if sacrificing save data means sacrificing some of those, then that's not really a big, you know, like an impediment to play or a penalty on you for saving, you know what I mean? Like, or anything like that. So I'm curious about how that's going to be implemented and what it's going to actually do. But, you know, anyway.
Yeah.
So moving along, though, it's got immersive exploration, which is Jala approved. So y'all know that exploration is my thing.
Yep.
And there is a lot to examine in this. There's tons of characters with a unique personality, stuff to look at, and a lot of lore, like I mentioned before, if you want to go hunting for it. And there's also very cute, genre-savvy commentary around, like, say, for example, if you go up to an urn or something, and everyone knows urns, you know, from like Zelda and things like that, there's always going to be treasures and stuff. You want to break it. And then it'll say something like, oh, you know, you could break this urn, but actually it looks like it's a chamber pot, ew, you know, or whatever. Okay. And it's like, you know, like it turns that expectation on your head. And there's like another point where if you look at this weird painting on the wall, it's like, you know, this is a scene depicting blah. And it feels like, you know, the same kind of thing that you would have if you were just looking around the world at every minuscule thing, trying to find something interesting to pique your interest or something like that. And it was just like commenting on the, you know, RPG trope of like, you have to go click around at everything to see if you can interact with it, you know, and things like that. So it entertains me in that way. So, other things that are in here, I have not seen them yet. Mini games such as carnival games, fishing and racing. Y'all know that I'm like wary of any fishing games or anything like that. I'm like,
do I?
Mini games. Yeah. The only fishing game the only fishing game that I like is Breath of Fire. I think it was 3. Breath of Fire 3. Yeah. That's the only one that I've ever liked.
If you're coming at Breath of Fire 3's fishing, then we've got
no, that's the only one that gets a pass. I like that fishing. I cannot stand fishing games, mini games, and anything else. And don't make me fish, damn it. So I don't know how these are going to be, if these are just side things you can do just for the heck of it or whatever. Hopefully it's just side stuff. We'll see. But I don't know. We'll find out. While you're exploring the world, each character has those abilities that I mentioned. So again, they can get into certain areas that other characters can't, like Pyrrha, the spear lady, the Leonardo character, can break rocks. So she can get through to areas that the others can't, just as an example. Mm-hmm. So between the quality of the writing, the attention to detail, the nostalgia factor, and so on, from all of the games that this is inspired by, and like the whole kind of era of SNES and 16-bit RPGs, you know, this is probably one that will continue to hold a special place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
I have a fun random story about a little thing in the first town, like in the demo. So I'm going to tell you this story now.
Okay.
You can talk to a lady while you're walking around town. She's called the Chicken Lady. And she tells you her chickens have all ran off and you've got to catch them and bring them back. And their names are delightful.
I can't hear the Chicken Lady without thinking of Kids in the Hall.
Let me tell you about the chickens.
Okay.
There's Beaky Boo.
Okay.
There's Petunia Wigglebottom, who is extremely angry. Her little profile is very mad.
Okay.
Petunia, it feels like that should come with the second. Like that needs a...
No, not quite. I love Petunia Wigglebottom. That makes me very happy, especially because she's angry. Then there's Jeremy.
Okay.
And then Jeremy?
Just Jeremy. And then the fourth one is Ugly Facington.
Okay.
And Ugly Facington, like the image. So Beaky Boo and Jeremy look exactly the same. Petunia Wigglebottom is angry. Ugly Facington is a fucked up looking chicken. It's fucked up looking. And so like when you hand Ugly Facington back to the chicken lady's like, oh, it's Ugly Facington. Thanks for bringing him back. Yeah. And so here's the thing. Ugly Facington had like, this is just a throwaway thing that the devs like wrote in there and just put random names in there and then moved on. But everybody latched onto it, yours truly included. And so Ugly Facington has a fan club large enough that they will be working with Makeshift to produce Ugly Facington plushies.
Okay. And
you better believe I'm going to have an Ugly Facington plushie now.
Okay.
So Dave and I love Ugly Facington so much that his name has been applied elsewhere in our lives. And so I saw a big bug that came in from outside and it was alive and should not be in my house. And so I was like, Dave, because I was like brushing my teeth or something and I had my hands full or whatever. And then I was like, Dave, it's an Ugly Buggington. You've got to get it. And so he caught Ugly Buggington and put him outside. And now every bug, which is in the house and should not be, or every bug that we see out in the world is now Ugly Buggington. It's just the nomenclature.
Yeah.
And when I was playing Resident Evil 6, I was playing the Chris Chapter 1. And you know, in there, they start turning into bugs. And I was look, they turn into Ugly Buggington. And so it's just a thing now.
Yeah.
That's what I call them.
It's a template. Yeah.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I will say I'm legitimately irked that this has mixed reviews on Steam. When I read through them, a lot of the reviews are from earlier iterations of the game from like a year and a half or 2 years, most of the time ago. Mm-hmm. It's been on Steam and early access for a little while now. And the folks that put those poor reviews on there have not returned to try it again and see what was updated.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm enchanted by what they have so far, what I've played of it. And this is not even the final form of it. So even when I'm streaming it, I'm probably not going to stream the whole thing because I want the game to be like further along the path. Like I'll play chunk of it. I'll play several hours of it, I'm sure, but I don't want to play all the way through when they're still, you know, working on it fully. But anyway, I will be doing that in time. So I'm excited about it. I'm going to be playing Sage and this is a great game. You should check it out. It's Alterium Shift. You can try the demo. It is free.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Neat.
Any questions?
No. I mean, I was just going to ask like what kind of early access it is. And you answered that.
Yes.
Do they have plans for more chickens?
I have been told by the devs that the Facingtons, there are more Facingtons. There are further adventures of Facingtons to be had later in the game. So
I'm curious, the second or the third?
There might be. I don't know. We'll have to
see. I'm just hoping if you complete all of them, you can unlock like an end game level chicken summon or something.
Mm.
I want all of the Facingtons to just turn into like a giant robot chicken.
Oh my God.
Okay. Anyway. All right. So, moving right along. The next thing that I played, Ace Attorney Investigations. It's a 2009 adventure game by Capcom following Miles Edgeworth as he investigates several cases to form an overarching story. I have only played the first case of this, and I don't know that I'm in a particular rush to play anymore. And I will explain why.
Aww. Yeah.
So I was really excited for this. Like, before it was available in the States, I had bought like a fan translated version of it, but it only plays on the original DS, which I don't have. So I was eventually going to buy an original DS just to play this fan made translation of the game. And so that's like the dedication level that I was going with to try to play this. And then when the collection came out, I picked that up. And I don't know. I'm not excited. So there's an investigation phase where you point and click around the crime scene looking for clues. And then there's a rebuttal phase where you confront characters and find contradictions in their statements and use evidence that you gathered to get closer to the truth. But this can also turn into rote trial and error. That's one thing against it.
Just like Phoenix Wright.
Yeah. But also, this game is really slow.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, if you didn't bring this up, I was going to say the pacing in it is a goddamn nightmare.
It's horrible. And your primary characters, at least in the first case, are just Edgeworth and Gumshoe. And while I enjoy those characters, they don't really have a particularly fun chemistry. It's not like Wright and Edgeworth. You know? So, like, there isn't a lot of back and forth. There's just Gumshoe going, herp-a-derp, I don't know nothing. And then Edgeworth going, nope, you sure don't know nothing. And then, moving Edgeworth, right along.
The guy with the great cravat, right?
Yeah.
The guy with a stupid, floofy cravat, yes. So
that is him. That's what I said, the great cravat. Piece of menswear.
No, I will never give in, never surrender. Anyway, Will Hughes says that the Investigations 2 is better overall, but I don't know if I'm ever going to get there anytime soon because it's slow.
The cases get so much slower. The next case, the next case, the one that takes place on the airplane, I think I'm still playing it.
Oh no,
yeah.
Yeah, that's part of the reason why I was just like off of playing Rain Code is because I'm like, man, it's slow. And now they're adding all these side quests, which make it slower. I'm not into this, because the pacing can make and break your game. And, that's unfortunate because Edgeworth is a great character. And I don't feel like he's being used to his maximum potential in this particular case, at least not from what I've seen.
Yeah. So.
That's all I have to say about that.
Yeah. I find it to be a bummer. Like I got it was on deep discount on Amazon or something. I got the Switch version of it just in case, but I don't feel myself being that motivated. Yeah. I'm curious about the second one, but I also don't want to jump right to it. And also there are Ace Attorney games that I haven't played yet that I want to.
Right.
The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles or whatever.
Oh, so, that one's so worth it. You should play that one. It's so much better.
Yeah. There's no world in which I play Investigations before that. So.
Yeah, you have to play. I need to go back to Great Ace Attorney Chronicles. I want to do a podcast on that.
Yeah.
Seriously. So. Anyway, moving right along, though, let's talk about Venba. Venba is an indie narrative cooking game by Visai Games released in 2023. You play as Venba, an Indian woman who moves to Canada in the 1980s to start a family with her husband. You have branching path conversations around which you cook South Indian food and restore recipes from your mother's cookbook. Mm-hmm. And the narrative covers a lot of ground. It's talking about questions of identity and belonging, culture and history, and trying to fit in, the conflict between parents who wish to maintain their native culture and a child who wants to be a normal kid in the new country that they are living in.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is told across a lifetime, skipping forward several years after each of the different scenes. As such, the story is not just a moment in time, but rather the accumulation of events and effects that those events have over time.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very well written. I got teary-eyed a couple of times because of feelings I can relate to, because I have a parent who came here from somewhere else myself. Not both parents, but I have one parent that is an immigrant. So it also made me very, very hungry for South Indian cuisine.
Yeah, I think that'll happen. I'm getting hungry looking at just the screenshots, and this is just fun, soft focus cartoon food.
Well, yeah, but then when you're cooking it and then it's got the sounds, the sounds are on point and you're just like, man, yeah. So any questions about Venba?
No, I'm glad to hear that it lives up. It's one of those games that I hear talked about in very high esteem and to get a first person.
Is the story on rails or does it have a kind of hey, the choices you make are going to change the ending you get?
I don't think that they changed the ending. The different ways the conversations can play out, those change a little bit, but it all kind of funnels to the same end point.
Yeah.
I don't get the sense that it's trying to be a choose your own adventure.
No. It's trying to, get across this really the emotion behind, being an immigrant family.
Mm-hmm.
And, to me, it really rings just from playing through it and, just the heart behind everything. It really feels like it's very much grounded in somebody's personal experience.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
Man, now I want Indian food, though.
It's really good. Indian food is really good. I love South Indian food specifically, the most. So anyway, moving right along, I have one more to talk about. Boy, is it a trash fire. I saved it to the very end so everybody can hear me lose my mind a little bit. And Kay, you watched this.
Give the people what they want.
Yeah. So I did, in fact. I picked this game. I bought this game some time ago before I had even replaced my computer yet, in the intention of eventually streaming it when I had replaced my computer, because I knew it was going to be terrible. Mm-hmm. And I got this game specifically for that reason, so that I could stream it. And I was like,
premeditated hate play.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I played this as a service to the people who like my reactions when things happen on the screen. So, this is I played Of Bird and Cage. It's a 2021 metal album presented as a 2-hour long narrative game, quote unquote, based lightly on Beauty and the Beast.
Good Lord.
You play as Geeta Barbut, a 25-year-old drug addict seeking to escape from her captor. Get this name, Bress Lupus.
Oh, okay. Like a wolf. Yes! A wolf, but also because a genetic beast. Condition. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I threw up in my mouth a little. Anyway, this game is nonsense and it has a surprising amount of gameplay to it. I was expecting this to be a cinematic walking sim sort of thing with branching dialogue or something, but instead I got into fist fights with everybody on the planet, had a shootout with the cops, and somehow won that. Ooh. And a whole lot of other stuff that is extremely weird to try and summarize. It's very weird. there's a lot of like dreamscapes because you're a drug addled, and some of it's in your head and some of it's in reality. And then people are singing ballads behind the door. Like the characters are lip syncing to the songs that are playing. It's a lot.
The characters, they're lip syncing, but the quality of like the character model asset is roughly somewhere between The Sims 2 and The Sims 3.
Yes.
And they're like lip syncing along with this incredibly over dramatic. I think the creators would call it operatic.
Yes.
Not even like really like metal. It's not like especially like shredding or heavy. Just kind of like evanescency kind of stuff.
It's that, symphonic metal.
That dares to ask the question, what if bad happened to a woman and maybe it was her fault?
Oh, God.
And not only that, but like the whole setup of this character and like her life and everything. I said it probably like 5 times during the stream where I'm just like, this is just the setup of every music video from a certain era of a certain genre of music. This is just fucking, it's just pick up, cut and paste, man. Wow.
It feels like adjacent, like at any given moment when I was watching this, and I'll admit to like, I was playing Ace Combat 4 when I had that on. So you were a background stream, but like every time I looked over, I kind of expected it to have turned into like a super Christian, like Hell House kind of thing. Like I definitely thought that this was going to be like, you know, the arc of the album was she found Christ and he killed the drug dealer who was holding her captive or whatever. it felt like that quality of just like moralizing.
Right. But then again, so this, not only is it a wild, weird game, but also there's a bunch of multiple endings to this.
Yeah.
And so I just decided I was going to take vengeance on everyone because like my character had been beaten and she had an abusive father and her mom was killed by her father. And I don't know, a bunch of other shit happened. And she's basically like, you know, this beat dog kind of
contrasting reaction to the last game. Do you have any indication that any of the story is based on someone's like personal experience?
No.
Or like out of their life? Or is this just like, oh, wouldn't it be metal?
So the actual songs themselves are narrating what's going on. So yeah. like they wrote the songs, all the lyrics based around this story that they wrote.
There
Wouldn't
is not
it be fucked up if
there is not a whiff. There is not a whiff of authenticity to this.
Right.
Yeah.
If it actually does reflect somebody's real experience, that's awful. I didn't get the sense from the parts that I looked at that this was somebody who understood drugs or music.
Right. Well,
and I'm saying that as somebody who barely understands music and doesn't understand drugs.
Well, and here's the thing though. It's got a branching path endings. So like you can end this in any number of different ways. I feel like if it was based on somebody's experience, it would be more on rails. Because
hey, look, your Hell House ending could still be out there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, okay, it can't be based on someone's, because now you've got me telling you the story. Okay, so I started the story. She's an abused child, whatever. She works as a waitress. She will never take that fucking apron off, by the way. That mm-hmm. up the apron will stay on no matter what's going on. In the middle of the shootout, she's got her waitress apron mm-hmm. on. She's dedicated to the bit. Anyway, so she wants to make music and stuff, but she's also a drug addict. And so she goes to this bar to have, you know, to go for open mic night.
Drug addicts can never make music.
Yeah, like what in the world? But anyway, oh, and then there was a whole mechanic about you have to take the drugs. And then I was like, okay, so is this going to be a thing? But no, it wasn't really a thing except for like in one part. Like they keep on throwing mechanics at you and then not using them anymore after a certain point.
Mm-hmm.
So then I go to this bar and I'm there to try to do open mic night, but I'm there too late. So I then ask the sound man to play my CD. So he plays my CD. And then my drug dealer comes, and because I don't want to have sex with him for drugs, he gets mad at me and I get in a fist fight with him. And then the sound man comes over and beats him. But then as I'm leaving, the sound man comes after me and then takes me and the drug dealer and ties us both up in a warehouse somewhere. And then I find out that when I was a small child and I was running after a bird in the street, he was in his car with his wife and child. And then they veered off the road because I was in the road. And then the car crashed and the wife and child died. And this man is holding this grudge against me and has found me again because he was the sound man at the local bar when I went there with my CD. And but then I somehow ended up, he ended up in love with me. And then we avenged ourselves against the cops and the drug dealer. And then he took me to go kill all the other people in my life, the bad boyfriend that I had and the
Would you say dad. You were avenged sevenfold?
Oh, Jesus.
But wait, there's more. And then at the end, we're burying all the bodies. And yes, there are shovel mechanics. Uh-huh. And after that, we walk hand in hand together to a cliff to sit and look at the sunrise. And then he goes back to the car for some cigarettes and comes back and shoots me in the head. Yeah. The end.
Okay.
The end.
Stepping back a moment, though, is the shovel mechanic like the Shovel Knight hopping shovel pogo
no,
shovel?
Because
that would make the game.
No.
I thought you were saying like, hey, ma'am, I'm here to fix your shovel.
No, but man, there's also so what like when there's the shootout with the cops, you can make traps for them. Like you can make That's an electric cool. puddle and do all this other stuff. But like you have time limits for everything in this game. And so like there's not enough time. Like this is a constant complaint from all the people in the reviews, which, by the way, this has a 7 out of 10 on Steam. And I do not know how it rates that high when Ulterior Shift has mixed reviews. And this is mostly positive. That's bullshit. Anyway.
I feel like the world we live in, like making a game that seems to deeply hate women probably gives you a built-in market.
Well, so the mechanics. So they give you these time limits and they're not enough time for you to actually get stuff done. A lot of times they don't give you any indication of what you're supposed to be doing or whatever. There were several times where they had nightmare QTEs. Anybody who complains about Resident Evil 6's QTEs needs to see the two clips that I took of this game of the nightmare QTEs, because one of them had a bunch of different buttons show up. Like there's no joke, probably about 30 different commands pop up on the screen at the same mm-hmm. time, and they're all different sizes. And I don't like, and some of them are more faded and some of them are brighter, but I don't know which thing I'm supposed to push. And then at another point, they have a double QTE where you're supposed to be mashing one button constantly the whole time to fill up a meter while you're also pressing other buttons at the same time on the keyboard. And they change, keyboard and it's not twister. The same, and it's not the same one. And then you have to do three, like you have to successfully do constantly pressing the button and then doing three other other inputs. You have to do that three times in order to actually open this locker. I'm like, okay, is anybody getting this? Because this is nonsense. This is horrible. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was rough. It was real rough stuff. But my eye kept on leaking when I was playing this game. And I don't know if it's because I was just like, you know, staring at this. I was probably staring at the screen just unbelievingly mm-hmm. while all this stuff is going on.
And like you have to just remember during pretty much this entire thing, you have these, you know, Sims badly lip syncing to this overwrought music that is yes. going on. It's a very uncanny experience from what I could see.
Oh my God. And then not only that, I'm going to have to link for y'all. I have a clip where your dad is going, "Fine, I fucking killed her." And it's like, it's actually like the music. And so it's like the singer guy, the screamer guy in the song mm-hmm. doing that part. But like, the animation for his face is horrible. Absolutely horrible. So yeah, people need to look at the clips of this game. It was nasty, horrible, terrible. Oh my God.
It, you know, and like having a game that is a playable album is a good idea.
Yeah. That sounds great on paper.
Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. I'm not the biggest fan of the, like, I don't listen to the kind of music that Sayonara Wild Hearts is, you know, like that kind of like electro pop kind of stuff. But like, I sat down and played that and I was fucking bawling because of how affecting it was, you know? So like a good enough game can kind of bridge that and make you appreciate the music in, you know, in a way that you wouldn't have expected coming in. This just seems like a squandering. It seems like bad ideas from front to back. Like you can't even say this is a bad, like this is a bad execution on something that seems to have had good intentions. It just kind of felt like they decided writing some misery porn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it felt like that basically every step of the way. And by the way, in the backstage, you can see that horrible model of the father going, "Fine."
Jeez.
Well, anyway, that's the only other thing I had to say about mm-hmm. that. So I will say that one of the folks who watched this asked me if I can just play cringecore games from now on. And I'm like, I do not have the constitution to do this all the time. Like, yeah. My head hurt when I was done. I was like, oh my God, this is so much.
The thing about it is, like, this is short. Like it was yes. like 2 hours. It could be played right. in one stream. Like
right.
if you were lashing yourself to a longer bad game in order to show everybody oh, no. everything on a regular basis, like this needs to be a sometimes treat. Trust me. I know right. we designed Abject Suffering so it could be sustainable.
Right. Right.
What's the opposite of a sometimes treat? A sometimes,
I think deadly poison.
Sometimes deadly poison.
Yeah.
Right. Right. Well, anyway, so I had some great thing to talk about, a mediocre thing to talk about, another great thing to talk about, and then a trash fire. So
yeah, woof. Yeah, we don't need to think about or talk about a burden cage ever again. We're free.
No, mm-hmm. a burden cage. No, yes. No,
until the sequel.
No,
that a will never be played. Cages.
Let's see who wants to go next.
I've just got some little stuff that I could crank through real quick.
Okay, Dennis.
Yeah, go for it.
So I got a new iPhone this week.
Okay.
Ooh. My 13, you know, the charging port no longer worked. I could only use touch chargers. It would randomly just shut down and restart in the middle of stuff. So it was time. But with a new iPhone comes 3 months free access to Apple Arcade. And so I haven't done a ton of mobile gaming recently, but I was like, all right, you know, I'll see what's in here if there's anything good. Two standouts to call attention to. The first one is called Hill Climb. And I know Apple Arcade puts the plus at the end of everything. I'm not doing that.
Yeah.
So, you know, if that keeps you from finding it, sorry. But it is like a endless runner via trials kind of game.
Okay. Trials being the like motocross, like
the motocross
dexterity, exactly. Balancing, you're trying to get through this course kind of thing.
Exactly. Yes. So you're doing that. There's a ton of vehicles, in the game. I've played almost exclusively just the first one, where it, you know, effectively a two button game, you know, you can accelerate or you can brake. The trick is that in the air, acceleration rotates you backwards. Think like popping a wheelie when you, you know, start really fast, and braking rotates you forwards. And the trickiness of the game comes from the fact that oftentimes you want to brake as a, you know, a way to slow down or line yourself up for the next, you know, hill or whatever that you're going to hit, but that also rotates you in a way that's not advantageous.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you need to right your car by rotating backwards, but accelerating when you're like going the wrong direction feels completely wrong. Like, hey, I'm about to fall over, I need to stomp on the gas. That's just very, very like there are deep-seated lizard brain things telling you don't do that. Like,
yeah, no,
slow it down. You can't, don't go faster.
There's some foul little creature switching the pedals on you.
Yes. But that makes for a really, really fun game that feels, you know, like trials, like it's got the physics kind of bounciness to it, and you're trying to get your tires to grip on the right places and load up your suspension in the right ways to get over all of these hills. It kind of scratches that itch in a cool way. Mm-hmm. So fun little game.
Is this Hill Climb Racing? Is that what's called?
Hill Climb Racing. Yes, gotcha. That's it. Go. I guess the icon for the app just says Hill Climb.
Yeah. So.
But the game is so clearly doused in free to play shit. That because this is through Arcade, you just bypass, but you know, the physics and just that little two button, you know, going along an endless path feels really good. But then the second you end a run, you go out to the main screen and there's a ton of different vehicle types. Like I said, you can upgrade each vehicle, which is in a game that is very physics driven, to have the reward for being, for doing well, be like, oh, well, you've upgraded your car now and it feels completely different. You know, I mean, I guess, you know, you're constantly relearning how to do well with your vehicle until you max everything out. And then it becomes just on focusing on getting far, but it is a very odd sensation to have upgrades built in a game that like really, really, you want the physics to be holding steady for you.
Yeah.
But then there's like parts and there's modes and there's all this stuff. I'm very grateful that I came to this on a free, you know, not having to engage with those systems kind of aspect. So, yeah, if you like trials, if you like endless runners, good little distractor for you. Any questions on that? Hill Climb Racing?
No,
nope.
Cool. The next one I was surprised by how much I liked, was called Arkanoid versus Space Invaders.
Oh,
and yes, that is the Arkanoid and Space Invaders that you are thinking of. This is like a game by Taito, and like, you know, officially of those series that mashes them together in a really interesting way. So Arkanoid, anyone who doesn't immediately know or recognize it, is essentially kind of like Breakout.
Yeah, it's Breakout, but with like power-ups for your paddle.
Exactly.
Oh, I remember that from NES.
Yeah. Or the arcade cabinet controlled with like a knob.
Yeah, that was really kind of funny. That there was an Arkanoid machine at the hotel that my grandpa, who lived out of state, used to stay in when he visited. We would go there to swim, And you know, you would go up and play the Arkanoid game, and because you were wet, it would zap you. Yeah,
haptic feedback.
But that's how you know it's working.
Did it zap you like when you lost or something, or was it
random? just randomly whenever you when you touched it wrong. Yeah,
it was like playing a game by holding a D battery to your tongue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's Arkanoid. And then Space Invaders, I think I would more expect people to know, the 8-bit aliens kind of slowly march down the screen and you fire up at them. These two have been mashed together so that you are controlling the Arkanoid paddle, with your thumb kind of dragging around the bottom of the screen. But instead of just bouncing a ball up at, the blocks above you, you are reflecting the shots of the Space Invaders coming down. And there's like a blend of blocks and Space Invaders that you're trying to clear your way through.
Okay.
And it leads to this really satisfying kind of mini loop within the game. Because at the start, when there's a ton of invaders on your screen, it's just about getting to as many projectiles as possible. Intercept as much stuff coming down, reflect it back. Don't really worry about where it goes because there's enemies everywhere. And then as you start to whittle down the number of enemies on the screen, it becomes a lot more about precision and kind of, you know, the further to the side of the paddle that a projectile hits, the more it's going to angle that way when it bounces off. And so you're kind of sniping the last ones a little bit more. And within all that, it's got you mentioned the power-ups for your paddle. Those come down as well. And so if you can grab those, if you grab a certain number, the game will kind of pause and your paddle turns into a bow and arrow that you like pull back and fire. Mm-hmm. And then that launches a regular like breakout or Arkanoid style ball that will bounce around the screen in addition to all the projectiles.
Yeah.
So projectiles come down and get reflected back up and kind of die on whatever they hit. The ball will bounce around for a while. And so you're doing kind of like, all right, am I just trying to get in the way of this? Do I need to think about how, you know, which angle I'm sending this one at? Mm-hmm. Where are the enemies on the screen? And it's very chaotic fun. Levels are gated at like a minute long. Like there's a timer that you're trying to race through to kill all the enemies on the screen. Mm-hmm. And so it's perfect for just having a quick second that you want to distract yourself. Like very, very, very bite-sized, even more than other mobile games.
Nice.
Kind of a genius idea.
Yeah.
It's a really good fit. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Final thing that's really fun is you can, because you're controlling the paddle with your thumb, you can move it on the Y-axis as well as the X-axis. Mm-hmm. And you can kind of bat at projectiles as they come into your range to like power them up as they reflect off. And so like you're like swiping up really quickly on all these projectiles, which makes it a lot harder to be precise about where on the paddle they hit, but now you've got like a supercharged version of it. So it feels like a game that just like they were very conscious of the physicality of how you would be playing it, and it's so weird to say a mobile game feels good to play, but this like really fits well with that. Yeah. I just got my phone in one hand, and I got a spare moment. It's a little package of fun for that.
Touchscreens are spotty, right? Touch screen controls can fucking suck. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. There are a lot of ways to do it wrong. Has Nintendo
ever done touchscreen?
I mean, on DS, yeah.
Yeah, DS.
Okay, that's right. Yeah, that seems like the type of BS they'd do.
Those wacky Nintendos. Those were the two games that stood out to me so far with Arkade.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would not be paying to have access to them, but since I paid for a new phone, I'm happy to kind of check those out.
Yeah, 3 months is enough.
I'd suggest on Apple Arcade is Knights on Bikes.
Knights on Bikes. All right. This already sounds good.
Yeah, it's kind of two little girls having sort of Stranger Things-esque adventures in their hometown, and it's kind of ambiguous whether they're just imagining things or actually doing adventures, but it's really good.
I hardcore, well, hold on a second. I can't find it on either. I searched knights on bikes like medieval knights and didn't find anything. And then I searched knights like nighttime and didn't find anything. So Maybe I'm missing something.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's Knights and Bikes.
Knight, but which like version?
The medieval style.
Okay, there okay. you go.
Yeah.
Huh. Cool.
Well, yeah. I've mentioned this game before, but one that works with the physicality of the iPhone really well is a puzzle game called The Company.
Yes.
That's a very good okay. puzzle game, and it's only on iPhone, so.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've been playing more Expedition 33. I've been playing more iRacing. You know, all my standbys and long term games I've been playing. But those are the two new ones that I thought would be fun to talk about.
Cool. Moxie, how about you?
Yeah. So I've got a couple of things. So I played some Void Crew with Dennis, and that game continues to be just amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I think although some of the funniest thing would be they came out with an expansion that changed up a bunch of the mechanics. So we were doing a run where we only about halfway had any idea what was going on.
Okay.
Like,
what's really funny is like you can't recapture that feeling of like, oh, I'm new to the game and trying to figure out how everything works, but totally you can if you rework the game.
Yeah, so we had weird, like, the entire run just weird electrical problems constantly. We're just like, you know, as far as we could tell, you know, nothing weird was happening. We weren't taking damage or whatever, but then just things would start shutting off.
But
which is especially problematic when the thing that shuts off is like your life support.
Yeah, yeah.
And then also they added like kind of a much more limited super weapon, which, you know, is like a rocket launcher type thing. However, unbeknownst to us, one of the bombs you can get for it as like a random loot drop is, I guess, a nuke, which is noteworthy because it's radioactive. So you take damage as long as you're holding the ammunition. I definitely died from that. I don't know, Dennis, if you died or just took damage before you figured out what was going on.
No, I did as well because it was like, oh crap, hot, you know, and like drop it. What is going on? And you know, you died. And I'm like, oh, I know. We need to go get our EVA suit, the space suit,
that's right. Yeah.
For going outside. And it's like, I figured out your puzzle. If I wear my space suit, I won't get hurt by radiation. And then I got hurt by radiation. did nothing.
Yeah. Huh. So it sounds like they changed up, enough.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. This was a big update because we didn't even get into, there's now like an endless mode and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Also for those who don't man the pilot seat, there is now a periscope in the ship that you can peek outside and get the same third person view that the pilot.
Oh, that's good.
Pilot does. Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah, it was fun. So that's, you know, continues to be strong. I really like the game's aesthetic. You know, kind of its mashup of, this isn't quite right, but kind of Art Nouveau, sci-fi, and like esotericism is pretty cool.
You don't see a lot of gilded spaceships.
No. Exactly. Unless you're playing 40K. Then you might.
It's like 40K, and then that one like management strategy game, the Banished Vault.
Oh yeah, did you ever play that?
No,
that
I want to.
That would be a you game.
Yes. No, I haven't yet.
So that was all for that. I also nipped back into Dying Light 2.
Okay.
And had a kind of interesting experience in what is one of the most stupid games ever played. They actually had a side quest that actually made me cry.
Oh. Huh.
You're eventually in the game, you turn on electricity to the city. And so, you know, after that, I'm wandering through the city and I get this survivor calls out to me. And he's like, hey, I need you to, I need you to like go and kill all the zombies in the basement of my house, and you know, turn on the flip the breakers, because if I can get electricity, I can bring my wife back to life.
Oh shit!
And this is a super super, like I said, dumb game. So I was very much expecting this to be like, oh, this is going to be doing some sort of like silly, like, oh, he's trying to do
like a Frankenstein.
Dr. Frankenstein, yeah, type of thing.
Well, I went straight to like sex doll.
Oh yeah, that. You get through, I'm maybe going to choke up some. You get through this whole thing, you know, fire off the zombies, that sort of thing. And it's like, all right, yeah, come up. I've brought my wife back to life. And you get up there and basically find that he has the answering machine with the last message from his wife before she died.
Oh God.
It's like, wow. It's really well done. Like, you know, doesn't play it for laughs, that sort of thing. But it's like, I did not expect like that sudden emotional thing.
Yeah. That's that's a hell of a concept for a mission like that. I mean, like it spends an entire game expecting, making you expect it to go like crass and base. And then it's like, oh no, here's like a super relatable thing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like how I don't take my grandma's number out of my favorites on my phone, because, you know, even though she died 2 years ago, like, no, that's right. Her number's going to stay there. Like that number goes to somebody else, but fuck, man.
Oh. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's weird. This is very much a deeply stupid game that actually at times has some commitment to, like you said, having some relatable storylines.
Uh-huh.
There's actually another one I kind of like where there's a guy who's basically sends you out to various points in the city to recover like socially meaningful books.
Okay.
And then, you know, when you bring them back, you know, we'll kind of do some commentary on it. And it's actually pretty cool because, you know, it's just things like, you know, one of them is, you know, Communist Manifesto. And he kind of explains how, these ideas aren't really relevant as much anymore because it's not really an economy or anything.
Yeah, there's not really like production.
Like, but like, you know, explains, kind of has this, I don't know, it's just this interesting thing of like someone explaining to someone who never grew up into society why these books are important to society.
How far after the Cataclysm is this?
This is, I believe 15 years after society collapsed. So, so probably like 10 years, something like that, after zombies first appeared.
Okay.
But your character is in their like early 20s, something like that. So you're basically, you're old enough to like have been a kid during the before times, but not really have much understanding of the previous world.
So
continue that. Probably unfortunately will not be continuing on because I was mostly playing it because I need to uninstall it to reinstall Void Crew. And then let's see, been continuing on with Borderlands 3, continues to be a lot of fun. I don't know that I've really anything too noteworthy. It's just, it's very much a game that the fun is just in shooting things, And then probably the biggest thing is the Easter event started up this week for Fallen London.
Mm-hmm.
So basically kind of that plot line is that eggs approximately the size of like beer kegs suddenly appear just randomly all over London. And so you can get these different types of eggs and all these, you know, the just different characters throughout the game have each kind of developed their idea of like, oh, I've got something I can do to, you know, make this whatever hatches from this egg stronger.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like you can go to kind of the jeweler, you know, kind of the high end shopping district of the city and get someone to like gild your egg and cover it with fancy diamonds, or that you can go to the theater district and have some like pretentious poet just read it like existential poetry or that mm-hmm. sort of thing. And based on how you do, you know, what you do to these eggs, you can then, you know, start incubating it, and 24 hours later it'll hatch and into some sort of just bizarre monstrosity. So I've gotten, I think I've gotten one of those, like, whatever the, like, extinct birds that were, like, half dinosaurs that they have in New Zealand.
Moa.
Yes, Moa, yes. I've got one of those, both a regular version and a two-headed version. I've got a Minotaur. I've got a... Kraken, who is an expert in economics.
When you say you've got, are these just kind of like kicking around, or did you like unleash them onto the world? Like what's happening in the fiction?
No, they are pets. They, okay. Except for, the giant pig I got, which is in fact a mode of transportation, but, most of them are pets.
Okay.
And you know, they also, the big, new addition this year was previously you could either, hatch them into companions, into pets, or you could hatch them into either clothing or weapons, because, you know, this very much, you know, falls under just weird science rules. However, the big thing they've added this year is the ability to hatch them into animals, or rather into mounts.
Oh.
Which requires you to do kind of a neat story mission where you have to like travel under London and get a sample from the unspeakable horrors that lie eternally sleeping under the city.
Okay.
Because definitely when there's, you know, something that's lying and eternally sleeping, the first thing you should do is hit it with a pickaxe to get a sample.
Without question.
I mean, that's just logic. so that's kind of a cool thing. It's actually the first time I've encountered these creatures. So they're mentioned real in passing in one of the, like, lore bits real early in the game, but I've never actually encountered them.
Mm-hmm.
Although one of the cool things about this game is there's, you know, tons and tons of side missions. So I actually talked with someone else who is playing it, who's had completed just some obscure side mission that, you know, has you actually interact with these creatures. And so when he went through this mission, there was an option when the person's like putting you up to going down and getting a sample to just be like, yeah, don't bullshit me. I know what those are. so I really appreciate the degree to which, you know, they take the time to be like, all right, yeah, we're going to, you know, write this entire, you know, dialogue that only whatever percent of our player base that bothered to play this obscure mission we'll actually see.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, the other big thing is there's a mechanic where once you get to the other side of the mirrors, there's this jungle that basically allows you to replay events from history So these are kind of the various kind of lore, you know, limited events the game has had when they've introduced new mechanics or, you know, often there would be ones around the release of new games, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is more or less a way to allow players to revisit these things and, you know, get some of the loot. Although the one thing I like is it is the original stories. However, kind of the conceit is that this is the like jungle shaping itself in order to tell this story. So you'll kind of get this thing where, you know, it'll be the story, but then also all of the characters are played by, like, I don't know, like Topiary and stuff like that, that are kind of in the shape of these various characters sometimes.
How does it communicate that for a text-based game?
It's hard to explain. They pay their writers very well. but so this one was basically the story of, it's kind of hard to explain, but basically people from the roof of the cavern that London's in, attacking London and almost wiping it out, and you having to first like rescue the survivors and then build like a flotilla of airships and go and attack them back.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun, much more action-oriented than the game usually is. This was kind of a cool way to, you know, in isolation, just give you something completely different.
Mm-hmm.
I think my two highlights of it are there's a sequence where basically the baddies drop a stalactite the size of a cathedral up on you.
Okay.
And when you go for the challenge, wherever you're choosing an option in the game, in the lower right is the information on, like, these are the stats that allow you to, like, unlock this and, you know, will determine how likely you are to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's, like, two of them. And when the stalactite gets dropped to you, the first that just says no, and the second one just says not even for you.
Okay.
So you just automatically die.
Wow.
Which, to be fair, like I said, this game, like, one of the conceits is death is explicitly no longer permanent.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Which actually plays into my second one, which is the mission kind of ends up with you again dying and ending up on boatman taking you across the River Styx.
Okay.
And I proceed to decide to simply start, like, singing Row, Row, Row Your Boat and manage to piss off the guardian of the afterlife enough that he just kicked me out of my boat and let me be back alive.
Okay.
So, yeah, that's, I don't know, I feel like that's kind of a life goal.
Yeah. I mean, sounds like a way to play the game is to find the funniest ways to die.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, yeah. I mean, there is many, many of those. You know, you can, the game delights in letting you do very bad decisions if you want to.
I just like the idea that you didn't cheat death, you annoyed them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. It's also funny because, like, this is, I think, the first indication of the boatman actually having much of a personality, kind of unexpected.
Huh.
That is funny.
But yeah, so really good stuff. It's also, you know, them, you know, giving you access to a lot of late game equipment. So I've been enjoying that. So,
how do you give these people money?
So basically the way it works is there's you know, the primary game, but then there's a lot of, you know, as you're going around visiting various locations, that sort of thing, there'll often be kind of side stories that you can unlock for about like $7 to $10, depending on the story.
Okay.
And these will, one, you know, reveal, you know, interesting lore, and often will be something that is kind of allowing you to do something that would normally, you know, you normally wouldn't have access to. So like, you know, allowing you to be like, I don't know, like, I'm trying to think of an example off the top of my head. Basically, a lot of it represents you having the option to be like, oh, no, I'm not just going to say, I'm not just going to, like, unlock a access to a laboratory in the university. I'm unlocking access to the laboratory in the university because I'm a personal friend of the dean. And then the story will be like, all right, how did that happen? You know, kind cool. of those sorts of things.
Yeah, I gotcha.
And a lot of them then will either give a exclusive, you know, reward, which may or may not be useful, or may just be cool.
Might just be fun. Or
exactly. Or a lot of them will unlock some like minor mechanics. So like, you know, give you access to, say, trading with a faction you normally can't trade with, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. It sounds like that would be very important if you're trying to like min-max.
It can be. I'd say more the biggest thing is like my friend I mentioned that had the thing with the stone pigs, the monsters that are under London, where, you know, his character knew about them. That was one of those stories. So a lot of it is more about like unlocking interesting experiences or contacts or stuff like that that your character has that mm-hmm. are likely to then come up in at later points in the game.
Got it. Hmm. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's Fallen London. I think that's all I really have. It's been kind of a slow week for gaming for me.
Yeah. I mean, pretty much the same over here. Like, I'm finally to a point where I can play more games for myself, nice. You know, with the Simon Play stuff. But like, I didn't reach that point in time to actually play enough of something to talk about. I just kind of gummed at the edges of some things, and you know, like maybe it'll be stuff I talk about in the future. I just need to see what catches me. And then I've also been doing The Last of Us 2. And that is good. Like I went long both nights this past weekend, because like okay. The story was up to points where I wanted to see how things were going to resolve, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But that's not anything I can, you know, feel safe to talk about right now. So the only thing that I have is I'm going to pull a Dennis and just mention a mobile game.
Nice. Go for it.
Yeah.
Mobile Games Week. We didn't even know it.
Yeah.
I mean, Fallen London, technically a mobile game.
It's a browser game, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, no. So I saw like a video game history account posted about it being like some anniversary of the game Scorched Earth. This okay. being an old PC game that was kind of a precursor to Worms. Like you were playing as tanks and it was turn-based multiplayer and you were like controlling the trajectory of the shots that you were making in the tank, like, you know, seeing part of the arc and then trying to guess where the rest of it was going to go, trying mm-hmm. to destroy other tanks, but also deforming the terrain. I was like, Scorched Earth, that sounds like a game that would be very fun on phone if it's there. There is no official Scorched Earth on the phone, but there is a, from what I can tell, just very tiny free game called, let me look here and see, Tank Infinity is what it is called. It's just a solo developer, and it is Scorched Earth if it met Desert Golfing.
Oh,
and, that's it. Like, you know, desert golf, it's just kind of effectively infinite holes of 2D golf where you're just, you know, pulling back and selecting the arc and trying to get into the hole in as few shots as possible. This is, you're a tank. You're in a desert that is made up of these hills. You are selecting the arc of your shot. And your shot can deform the earth wherever it hits, which means that you can like unseat yourself. You can unseat the castle, which is what you're trying to hit instead of the, instead of a hole or anything like that. And yeah, it's just meant to be
you're
like
trying to turn the castle into a hole.
Yes. And it is just an infinite series of procedurally generated, it seems, one screen scorched earth tank trajectory shot. Kind of. It is incredibly simple, about as simple as it gets, but I find it to be pretty satisfying. And I'm on hole like,
is there like a par for every shot?
There is no par, but it does keep track of how many shots you've done and what your average is.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm on hole 52. Yeah.
See, I was afraid for a moment there. I thought you were going to say, you know, and I couldn't find it, but I did find this great game called World of Tanks.
No, I'm in enough trouble with the State Department.
Yeah.
Oh gosh. Or no, that's War Thunder. Sorry. That gets all the military leaks. So yeah,
I think World of Tanks had a few.
Yeah. Maybe some, I don't know. But yeah, Tank Infinity. It's neat. There's literally nothing to say about it besides it is just one satisfying mechanic done over and over again.
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer where we ask you a question and you answer it. Dennis, what is the question that you ask the nice people?
Yeah, so, you know, games should be fun even if you are not performing at your peak. And there's plenty of games where it's like, oh, it was so hard and then I did it and that felt good. But I think, you know, games should also be fun if you're not doing good or you're off your game that day. So that is what the question was about, is what are games that are fun even when you are off your game?
Yeah. And I will get started here with Callum, who says Jurassic World Evolution. If everything goes wrong, you get to have a Jurassic Park movie. This is the Jurassic Park builder, like management game.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
That's a good one. Let's see. Moxie, what does Brain in a Bowl say?
Brain in a Bowl says, sayonara, Wild Hearts. A run of Begin Again or The World We Knew. Or a full album run, if I have the time. Always makes me happy, no matter how disappointed Queen Latifah is at my score. If I really screw up, a nice wizard would just teleport me past that bloody trippy mushroom section.
Yeah.
I have no idea what any of that meant.
Second Sayonara Wild Hearts reference in this. Uh-huh. Yeah. It's a playable like album that is like an arcade game and a story cool. About like, you know, just it's like a queer breakup story, but also about finding yourself. It's really neat. It's good. Oh, and actually,
it's not of Bird and Gage.
No, yeah, it's definitely not that. Right. And Queen Latifah is the narrator. And if you do bad, she says bronze rank. And if you do well, she says gold rank.
Oh, so this is actual Queen Latifah,
The developers joked about her being the narrator for it. And they reached out and she's like, yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Amazing. Oh,
I'm looking up right now. Also, pretty sweet graphical style.
Oh, yeah. No, unreserved recommendation, not least of which because it's only like, I don't know, an hour long. Yeah. Oh. Moxie, you're off your mic quite a bit.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was leaning in, looking at the...
Yep.
My bad.
Let's see. Dennis. Or wait, no, this is Jala. Jala, what's Christian say?
Christian says, Splatoon 3 is a reliably good time, even if I'm doing badly. The music, short match length, and overall whimsy make you smile whether you're winning or not.
Yeah. Also, you're playing against a bunch of kids, so how bad could it be? Yeah.
Splatoon, definitely, definitely a treasure.
Yeah. Dennis, why don't you pick one from our Slack?
Yeah, what's up, Slack? So Lucy says, Borderlands 3 DLC, minimally, you should play Krieg and Hammerlock. The Wild West one is also good.
Hmm. I wasn't aware they had DLC. Like, I'm not
Sounds
surprised.
Sounds like we've got something to co-op.
Huh? Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Doug Nostalgia Arcanum says, any fighting game, as long as you're playing with friends and not online obsessives at over level 9,000. I can't count the number of afternoons lost to Street Fighter 2, Mortal Kombat, Smash Brothers, etc. Hadouken. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Play with your friends. Like, I don't know.
Got my ass kicked, but it looked cool.
Yeah. Why not? That's like the entire appeal of like the Marvel versus or the Capcom versus games. Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Let's see, Moxie, what does Under the Deep Blue Sky say?
Cameron.
Okay, I didn't know. So
Cameron says, my go-to used to be Destiny, the original, not 2. I was actually really good at PvP somehow. Nowadays, I don't often do any multiplayer stuff unless it's couch co-op. Having recently played through Split Fiction with my wife, it's one of the best gaming experiences I've had.
I have a listener wants me to play that game with them. I just have a list. So I've got a line. There's a line of people who want to play games with me right now.
Dance cards full. Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Yeah. It looks really sharp.
It does look really awesome. And you know, like I'm not opposed to playing it. It's just that, you know, I'm already pre-promised to several individuals.
Yeah.
Being less of a good person. So people don't want to hang out with you.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a terrible co-op friend. I mean, like just ask Rook. I've got some some clips from me being terribly neglectful because I'm having a good conversation with the people in the chat.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. And I need to play Split Fiction with Ben. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Jala, what does Hurricane Belushi say?
Hurricane Belushi says, the beauty of the classic JRPG is that it's the perfect meritocracy simulator. I put the work in, I get a guaranteed XP return. All but the worst bosses can be surmounted by running around in circles for hours, beating up slimes or rats or what have you. It's mind-numbing in a pleasant way.
Yeah.
Man, now I'm just imagining what would an RPG would be like if it simulated a real-world quote-unquote meritocracy, where, like, I don't know, after a couple of fights, you have to go to your boss and explain why your accomplishments merit a level up.
Huh. Sorry, it just set against the police sirens.
I know, exactly.
We're not cutting it out. It's just it really pulled focus.
Right.
Yep.
Dennis, grab the other one from Slack there.
Yeah, so Kay says, Magic the Gathering Puzzle Quest or Marvel Puzzle Quest are my relaxed fidget games. They have some mental stimulation related to putting a deck or a team, respectively, together to meet any daily challenges or event-specific bonuses, while the actual act of play is generally very relaxing. Yeah, anything that's not on a timer, it's like, hey, look, figure this out.
Yeah.
In however long you want to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
Or don't, and just slap some shit together and see what happens.
Yeah. Like, made it on your like terms. That. Yeah. Dognozzle writes, I used to play a lot of Spelunky, and it was always fun even though I sucked at it. Even if I died horribly, it was usually due to some crazy chain reaction of explosions and ninja shopkeepers that was too funny to get mad about. Yeah, Spelunky is a secret slapstick game.
It really is.
Yeah.
This is off topic, but it disturbs me greatly that Dognozzle's avatar is a cat.
Oh, mixed messaging.
You did that on purpose.
Moxie finishes up with Michael says.
Michael says, Mario Kart, Double Dash for me specifically. If you want a challenge, it's there, but it's just as fun to goof around and play the battle modes with friends.
Yeah. A lot of good memories playing multiplayer Mario Kart.
Oh, yeah.
Man, does anyone regularly play Mario Kart in like the whatever 200, 400, whatever it gets up to CC where it's like actually technical and you have to pay attention?
Yeah, I have in the past.
I actually never knew what the CC rating did.
It's like
how powerful the cars are.
Yeah, it's like combination like speed and like AI intensity.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. No, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. Because I'm a parody of myself and I only talk about like four games max, I'm going to say that a game that can be fun, even if you're having an off day, is something in a rhythm game, like a Rock Band, or in my case, either Clone Hero or Rocksmith, which is like, like, yeah, if you're, you know, banging on all cylinders and you feel like you can really, you know, fit in the difficult stuff, you can play, you know, up in the difficulty. But even if you have to go down to like, I don't know, like 2-3 difficulty songs, something like that, you're still playing good music that you like. Yeah. and you know, in the case of like Clone Hero drums or Rocksmith, you're actually like playing the song, you know? So like it's a good way to like do a video game shaped thing and relax and feel like you're getting better at stuff, even if you're not having the best day. Yeah.
So something cool I learned this week is that Jimmy Buffett re-recorded a bunch of his songs so that they could be included in a Rock Band.
Huh. No way. I didn't know that.
That's cool.
Yep.
Huh.
Points to Jimmy.
I wonder if the McElroys talked him into doing that. No, that timeline doesn't line up. Let's see, Moxie, how about you?
Again, being a parody of myself, I'm gonna have to go with Warframe.
Okay.
One, just like flipping out ninja style is pretty much always fun, and I think it's a combination also of there being a ton of different things to grind on, to grind for, which, so, you know, whatever you're doing, you can be making progress. And then also they have a large number of in-game events that if you want to can just straight up be like, all right, go wreck everything. So, you know, if you want something super tactical and challenging, it's there. But if you just want a fight where, you know, you'll be up, 1,000 to 1 in the kill rankings, that's also available.
Yeah. Plenty to do.
Yeah.
Jala, how about you?
I've got 100 million different things I could answer with. I'll go with Doug and be like, yeah, picking a favorite fighting game is a real easy one. Even if you're having a sucky time of it, like you can just kind of turn off your brain and let your hands do the thing. And even if you're failing at it, it's whatever. Who cares? You know? And then also I would say Resident Evil 6. I haven't played that game in a long fucking time. And coming back to that, Kay, you'd asked me, like, when was the last time I played this game? And the last time I played this game was probably when you and I streamed it.
Yeah.
Because my computer hasn't been working and, like, I have not played it on Steam Deck. So, it must have been the last time you and I were doing it. So I haven't played it in a number of years at this point. As weird as it is, as much as it's been installed on whatever computer the entire time, like it's actually been dormant for a while. So when I first got back into it, I was like, oh boy, I suck. And my sucking at that game after the number of hours that I put into it is just being the same as somebody who's never played it, which is fine. I mean, you know, like, Rookie and I were doing the exact same right at first. And then now, like, I'm pulling ahead now, but like, it's only because like it's coming back to me finally or whatever. And it's variable. It depends on if I'm paying attention to the game at all or, you know, am I BSing with people in the chat or what, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Man, I've loved, seeing Rookie's reaction to Chris.
And that will continue. That will continue for two more sessions as we finish out the rest of Chris's campaign.
So. Chris and smaller Chris.
I'm still disappointed that you do not ship Chris and Pierce.
Me?
No, me.
No, I don't.
Oh, okay. Me. All right.
Yeah, I just don't. Like,
obviously, Kay ships them.
Yeah. When the fuck have I shipped anything?
Yourself with Karlach. Anyway.
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, but like, we've gone on this conversation. There have been podcasting hours upon which we were debating and talking about that exact thing. I just don't see it. I don't know. Whatever. I mean, yeah. If you think so, cool. I mean, good for you. Yeah. Go with that headcanon. I mean,
yeah. And, Dennis, how about you?
Yeah. So for me, it is the mini, metro and mini motorways games. There's just something, in their simplicity, which is soothing. And going in knowing like this doesn't end until I fail. And usually that's just because it's on my terms and I don't want to think that hard about it versus it truly getting too difficult.
God, so, that gets so brutal so fast to those games.
but it's like, it's kind of like going out on my own terms, I guess I would say, where it's like, even if I'm not going to take it seriously and try to min max and make all the right decisions, I'm going to draw some pretty lines and the things are going to go bleep blop around the lines. Mm-hmm. And that makes me happy. So, yeah. Those games kind of, even if I screw up and I'm not being efficient and, what have you, there's just something pretty and simple and zen about it.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Cool. Well, that was a lot of answers. Thank you, everybody, mm-hmm. for responding. If you would like to participate in these, follow us on Blue Sky, the levelpodcast.bsky.social, and watch for the prompts to go up on Monday afternoons. Thank you, Dennis.
The end boss.
Now it is time for the end boss, where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us and how we feel about them. It's going to be truncated because there is not an awful lot happening, comma, that we want to talk about.
Right.
Like, I don't know. It's pretty cool that Giant Bomb bought themselves.
Right.
Hot on the heels of Polygon going away. That sucks. No.
Oh, what's this?
No. Yeah. Polygon basically got acquired, or Vox sold it to a company that laid off all the people and hired hired people
AI
to basically
to
run it as like a zombie site. And, you know, yeah, that's bad news. But that's not what we're talking about. Only Dennis and I have stories. This one's interesting to me. So there's a new Mafia game coming out. Mafia, the Old Country, being like a prequel set in Italy. I've never played the Mafia games. I understand the third one's supposed to be pretty good. The one that's like set in the South in the 60s. But this one is interesting to me. The story is interesting to me because it is launching for $50 this summer at a time when almost every other game is charging more money. Every other company is charging more money. A brand new game of this particular kind of like, I don't know, like visual quality or whatever, seems like it would be a shoe-in just to be like, yeah, new games are $80 right now, whatever, but it's $50 on whatever it comes out, on whatever it's hitting. In this time when a lot of pricing stuff seems to be in flux, I am very interested and curious to see who prices at a budget kind of, price point and how that works out for them.
Right.
Yeah.
And do I remember that the Mafia games are fairly like, they occupy a similar space in my mind to like GTA, where they're open world and
sprawling. This one is not open world. This one is like like a linear action adventure kind of thing. Think like a super cinematic like Uncharted game. Almost, it looks like.
Okay. I mean, can still be sprawling, but maybe it would be interesting to see how focused in they get.
Yeah. But even that, saying like, okay, we're going to make a scaled-back product. It's not going to be a whole open world. We're just going to tell the story that we want to tell. And our price is going to reflect the change in that, the change in that ambition. Like, I don't know. I'm old enough to remember like when NFL 2K5 came out and they're like, $20. Guess what? Or like when Katamari Damacy came out and they said, well, this is $30. You have no idea what the fuck this is going to be, but you do know that it is going to be $30. Yeah. I don't know. Like, I think there's a lot of really interesting stuff that can and should happen at that lower price point. I just thought this was neat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Any disagreements? Anybody want to say games should be more expensive?
Kay's like ready to fight. That's the next line.
Dennis, how about you? What is it the 20th anniversary of?
Yeah, it's just a fun, dumb thing, but it's the 20th anniversary of Leroy Jenkins.
Jesus.
Yeah. this was probably one of the earlier viral videos that I was aware of as a thing.
Yeah.
This is right on the cusp of like internet meme culture. It certainly carved out its mark. It took almost that full 20 years to get confirmation that it was actually staged as a comedy skit.
Yeah.
Which is very funny. The guy who made it said, we didn't think anyone would believe it was real. We thought it was so obviously satire, but mm-hmm. we were wrong.
Yeah.
Everyone knows that guy.
It's basically the premise of like 1,000 web comics, which is like, what if there was somebody who ruined your raid?
Yeah.
But I mean, it's the fact that like, I'm going to Leroy Jenkins in there and XYZ, like it has entered the vernacular in a way that I almost would expect someone who was not a gamer to recognize that.
Yeah. At least they would like catch the vibe of it at the very least.
Right. Yeah. So kudos, Leroy Jenkins. Kudos.
I mean, to be fair, the name Leroy Jenkins is a very Leroy Jenkins name.
Yeah. So there is something about this. I don't want to be like a storm cloud, but like that, there was something about like the different character names. You know, I don't know. I'm not going to problematize this.
Are you trying to bring discourse into this?
No, it's just it related to the name, but I'm actually not sure if that's the case. So
cool.
Yeah. So I'm not going to do that, but yeah, no, it's a,
you're not going to Leroy Jenkins into this conversation.
No, discourse. I'm not going to kill the vibe. Yeah. No, 20 years. That's the real story. Like, oh yeah, yeah. No, 20 years. Man, the 20th anniversary of so many like stuff, like so many things that I consider to be like, oh, but like that was adulthood. Like that's from when I started adulthood. Mm-hmm. Like that's starting to happen.
Albums.
Yeah. That's the big one is,
next year, Leroy Jenkins can drink.
Yes. Probably shouldn't though. Is there anything else? Did anybody have any last minute, any last no, minute additions?
No last minute.
Okay. All right.
The optimism of that statement is astounding.
I didn't want to cut anybody off. How do you all feel about buttoning it up?
Buttons.
Thank you so much for listening to level number 543. We appreciate you taking the time to listen. You know what to do to help out the show and the network: ratings, reviews, Patreon, telling your friends, spreading the word. All of that is helpful. Jala, what's happening on Jala's place? Jala Chan's place. Sorry, yeah. I messed up.
So the last episode that dropped was on the movie Companion. The next one that comes out on the 23rd will be on Cooking and Nutrition 101. This is the series I am doing with professional chef and friend Mike. And there's several episodes of this stuff out now. There's this two. This will be the third one. And then also in June will be the rest of Shining Force 3. two different episodes in June. Both episodes are Shining Force 3. And then Shining Force 3 will be done.
The sprawling saga.
Yes, yeah. It's been like the forever game. It's been really great replaying it and, you know, playing it in like a different format on the ROM with the quality of life improvements that the Shining Force team, you know, translation team has done. mm-hmm. and just all of that mess. And then, of course, being able to play it in English because I had it originally in Japanese and yes. I had like a translation printed out from a website that I was using. Anyway, that's stuff you can look forward to on my show.
Nice. Dennis, anything from you?
Tariff's going to be tariffing. Maybe a little bit of more stability as potentially they're hammering out a deal, but I'm not holding my breath.
Jeez.
But we shall see.
What a bummer.
I mean, apparently all you have to do is give them a jumbo jet and it'll be, you know, happy. So
just do that, Dennis.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was wondering what to do with this one in the backyard.
Yeah, it takes up a lot of space.
It does.
Just saying. If you really cared, you would get a jumbo jet.
Maybe I could take a picture of a model plane and just like frame it ambiguously so you can't quite tell what size it is and see how far I can get with that.
Yeah. All right. Well, I've been K Ross. You can follow me on Blue Sky at K.Zone.
I like that you just like bubble up with happiness when you say that.
Yeah.
I have been Dennis Furia. You can find me on Blue Sky at Furia Games.
Moxie, it is me.
And I'm Jellichon in all the places that you can find me, including Twitch and Blue Sky and Jellichon.place.
Yeah. And stick around for some titles. I didn't have any.
I had one.
Okay.
I had a bird in cage.
Okay.
I had one as well. I had a premeditated hate play.
Okay. Dennis.
I had two. My recommended choice is Ugly Buggington.
Okay. Yay!
That is pretty good.
And this one is probably too long, but Leroy Jenkins is a very Leroy Jenkins name.
Okay.
We could do a very Leroy Jenkins name.
That could be good as well.
I think I like a burden cage.
A burden cage suits the game.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Let's do that. All right.
Woo!
Sweet.
It is decided.